Before we dive in today, I want to let you know that this episode is entirely AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. This episode is brought to you by Dreamweave Sleep Masks, the fictional company making bedtime blissful with temperature-regulating fabric. And please remember that some information may be hallucinated, so double-check anything important before acting on it. I'm Sarah, and today we're exploring Robert Graves' monumental work, The Greek Myths. It's been called the most comprehensive collection of Greek mythology ever assembled.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. I'm Marcus, and I've been teaching classical literature for 15 years. Graves' work is absolutely essential for anyone trying to understand the foundations of Western storytelling.
This isn't just another mythology book, is it? What makes Graves' approach so distinctive?
Graves doesn't just retell the stories. He's trying to decode them, to understand what they meant to the people who created them. He sees myths as historical records disguised as stories.
So he's treating mythology like archaeology?
Exactly. He believes these myths preserve memories of actual social and religious transformations in ancient Greece. The stories aren't just entertainment, they're cultural DNA.
What problem was Graves trying to solve when he compiled this collection?
The myths were scattered across hundreds of ancient sources, often contradictory. Scholars had pieces of the puzzle, but no one had assembled the complete picture in a way that made sense to modern readers.
And Graves had the credentials to tackle this massive project?
Absolutely. He was a classical scholar, a poet, and he'd spent decades studying ancient religions. His novel, I, Claudius, showed he could make ancient worlds come alive for contemporary audiences.
So he brought both scholarly rigor and storytelling ability to this project.
Right. He wasn't just cataloging myths, he was creating a coherent narrative system that readers could actually navigate and understand.
What's his central argument about what Greek myths actually represent?
Graves argues that the myths record the historical transition from matriarchal goddess worship to patriarchal sky god religions. The stories aren't fiction, they're coded history.
That's a pretty bold claim. Can you break that down?
Think about it this way. Many myths feature male gods overthrowing or subduing female deities. Zeus swallowing Metis, Apollo taking over Delphi from the Python, Perseus killing Medusa.
So these aren't just random monster-slaying stories?
According to Graves, no. They're memories of actual religious conquests. Male-dominated tribes defeating societies that worship the great goddess.
What evidence does he offer for this interpretation?
He points to archaeological evidence of goddess figurines predating male god imagery. He also analyzes the symbols, the ritual elements, embedded in the stories.
Like what kinds of symbols?
The sacred marriage motifs, the triple goddess appearing as maiden, mother, and crone. The lunar calendars embedded in hero journeys. These aren't random details.
How does this theory change how we read individual myths?
Take Theseus and the Minotaur. Traditionally, it's a hero story, but Graves sees it as the Greek conquest of Crete, where bull worship represented the old matriarchal religion.
So the labyrinth isn't just a maze.
In Graves' reading, the labyrinth represents the complex ritual patterns of goddess worship that the Greeks were systematically destroying and replacing.
This seems like it would be controversial among scholars.
Oh, it absolutely was. Many classicists thought Graves was reading too much into the stories, imposing a modern theoretical framework on ancient material.
But his approach has influenced how people think about mythology?
Tremendously. Even if you don't buy his specific theory, he showed that myths have layers of meaning beyond the surface narrative.
Let's get practical. How does Graves actually organize all these myths for readers?
He structures them genealogically, following divine family trees. But he also cross-references every story, showing how different versions relate to each other.
So if I want to understand, say, the story of Persephone, how would I use his system?
You'd start with her main entry, but Graves shows you how her story connects to Demeter, to Hades, to seasonal festivals. He maps the entire web of relationships.
That sounds incredibly useful for writers and storytellers.
Exactly. Instead of getting lost in contradictory versions, you can see how all the pieces fit together. It's like having a GPS for mythological storytelling.
What's his method for handling contradictory versions of the same story?
He doesn't pick one correct version. Instead, he shows how different versions reflect different historical periods or regional variations. Each contradiction tells you something.
Can you give me a concrete example of how that works?
Take Dionysus. Some stories say he was born from Zeus's thigh, others from Semele. Graves shows how the first version represents later patriarchal editing of an originally maternal birth story.
The contradictions aren't bugs, they're features.
Right. They're evidence of how the stories evolved as Greek society changed. The contradictions are actually data points.
What about his annotation system? How does that help readers?
Every myth gets extensive footnotes explaining the ritual background, the historical context, the symbolic meanings. It's like having a scholar sitting next to you.
Is this overwhelming for casual readers?
Not if you approach it right. You can read the stories for pleasure and dip into the annotations when you want deeper understanding. It's modular.
Let's talk about his interpretive framework. How does he decode the symbolic elements?
Graves looks at colors, numbers, animals, plants mentioned in the myths. He argues these aren't random details, but coded information about ancient rituals and beliefs.
Like what? Give me something I can use.
When you see groups of three women in myths, the Fates, the Graces, the Furies, Graves argues these represent the triple aspect of the great goddess. It's a consistent pattern.
So if I'm writing a story and I want to tap into that archetypal power?
You'd understand that three isn't just a convenient number. It carries deep psychological and spiritual resonance that connects to very ancient patterns of thought.
What about his tree and plant symbolism? How does that work?
Each tree was sacred to specific deities and represented different aspects of the goddess cult. The oak for Zeus, the olive for Athena, but originally these were all goddess symbols.
So when Daphne turns into a laurel tree to escape Apollo?
Graves would say, that's the story of Apollo appropriating the laurel, which was originally sacred to a goddess figure. The pursuit represents religious conquest.
This gives every transformation story political meaning.
In Graves' system, yes. Transformation stories often represent the absorption of one cult into another, the way religions actually changed historically.
How does someone actually apply this when reading myths or creating their own stories?
Start by looking for patterns. Who has power at the beginning versus the end? What natural elements appear? What animals? These aren't decorative, they're meaningful.
Let's walk through a specific example. How would I analyze a myth I've never seen before using Graves' approach?
Take the story step by step. First, identify the central conflict. Then look at the symbolism. If it's a male god defeating a female monster, that fits Graves' patriarchal conquest pattern.
What about the setting details?
Caves, islands, and underground spaces often represent the goddess realm. Mountains and sky represent the new male gods. The geography tells you about the spiritual conflict.
And the animals involved?
Serpents, bulls, and birds of prey were commonly associated with goddess worship. When heroes kill these animals, they're symbolically defeating the old religion.
This seems like it could help modern storytellers create more resonant myths.
Absolutely. Instead of randomly choosing story elements, you can tap into symbols that have thousands of years of psychological resonance.
But how do you avoid just copying old patterns? How do you make them fresh?
Graves would say you need to understand what the symbols meant originally, then consciously choose how to use them in contemporary contexts. Knowledge gives you creative freedom.
What about for people studying literature or mythology academically?
Graves gives you a systematic way to compare myths across cultures. His method isn't limited to Greek stories. It's a toolkit for understanding mythological thinking, generally.
Can you give me a practical research example?
If you're studying hero journeys, Graves helps you see which elements are universal and which are specific to Greek culture. The patterns become visible.
What about common mistakes people make when trying to apply his system?
The biggest mistake is overinterpretation. Not every detail in every story fits his grand theory. Sometimes a story is just a story.
How do you know when you're pushing too hard?
Graves himself was sometimes guilty of this. If you find yourself forcing connections that don't feel natural, step back. The strongest patterns should be obvious once you see them.
What about timing? How long does it take to really internalize this approach?
You can start seeing basic patterns immediately, but developing real fluency takes months of reading and practice. It's like learning a new language.
Is there a specific sequence people should follow when working through his collection?
Start with the creation myths and the major Olympian gods. These give you the foundational patterns, then branch out to hero cycles and local legends.
What if someone only has time for one section?
The Persephone cycle. It contains all of Graves' key ideas in one coherent story, the goddess cult, seasonal rituals, patriarchal overlay. It's the theory in microcosm.
Let's get critical. What does Graves do brilliantly in this work?
His organizational system is unmatched. Nobody else has made Greek mythology this accessible and cross-referenced. It's an incredible scholarly achievement.
And his interpretive framework?
Whether you agree with his goddess theory or not, he demonstrated that myths have historical and psychological depth. He changed how people think about these stories.
Where does the book fall short?
Graves sometimes forces evidence to fit his theory. His goddess cult hypothesis is compelling, but not always supported by solid archaeological evidence.
Are there specific claims that have been debunked?
Some of his etymologies are questionable, and he occasionally cherry-picks sources that support his interpretation while ignoring contradictory evidence.
How do modern scholars view his work?
It's complicated. They respect the scholarship and organization, but are skeptical of his grand unified theory. Most see it as brilliant but not definitive.
What does he leave out that readers should seek elsewhere?
Archaeological context, for one. Graves relies heavily on textual sources. For the material culture behind the myths, you need to read actual archaeologists.
Any other gaps?
He's less strong on the social and economic factors that shape mythological development. He focuses on religion and psychology, but not so much on politics and economics.
How would you compare this to other major mythology collections?
Edith Hamilton is more accessible, but less comprehensive. Bulfinch is more traditional, but doesn't offer Graves' interpretive framework. Graves gives you both stories and tools for understanding them.
What's the book's lasting impact been?
It's influenced everything from academic mythology studies to popular fantasy literature. Writers like Neil Gaiman and Rick Riordan are clearly working with patterns Graves identified.
Has it changed how mythology is taught?
Definitely. Even teachers who disagree with his interpretations use his organizational system. It's become the standard reference framework.
What about its influence on popular culture?
Huge. The idea that myths encode historical truth has become commonplace in fiction and film. That's largely Graves' influence.
Any major criticisms that have emerged over time?
Feminist scholars have pointed out that his goddess theory, while seemingly pro-feminine, still treats ancient women as primarily defined by their religious roles.
And there's been criticism of his historical methodology?
Yes. Modern historians are more cautious about reading myth as literal historical record. The relationship between story and history is more complex than Graves suggested.
If someone listens to this episode and reads only one thing, what should they focus on?
Start looking for patterns in stories you already know. Before you even open Graves, practice seeing the repeated elements in myths, fairy tales, even modern movies.
That's something they can do immediately.
Exactly. Once you start seeing patterns, you'll never read stories the same way again. That's Graves' greatest gift, teaching you how to see structure beneath surface narrative.
And if they do decide to tackle the full collection?
Don't try to read it straight through like a novel. Use it as a reference work. Look up stories as you encounter them in other reading. Let it expand your understanding gradually.
Any final thoughts on why this book still matters?
Graves showed us that ancient stories aren't dead artifacts. They're living systems of meaning that still shape how we think and create. That insight is as relevant now as it was when he wrote the book.
Marcus, this has been incredibly illuminating. Thanks for helping us decode not just Greek myths, but how to think about storytelling itself.
Thank you, Sarah. Remember, whether you're reading ancient myths or writing new stories, the patterns are there waiting to be discovered.